We had initially planned to both move to Austin, Texas, where we are right now, but I broke up with you at a Zoop's restaurant, a soup-based fast food restaurant. Fact or fiction?
That is a...
Before meeting April, you did have a passionate love affair with Condoleezza Rice. To make production budgets stretch, on more than one occasion, we did sleep in the same bed, two businessmen sharing a bed to do business.
This week on the Bagley Talks to an Important Person podcast, former Wieden & Kennedy CCO Jason Bagley interviews the one and only founder and COO of Callan and medical scientist Craig Allen. Dr. Allen invented the pediatric pulmonary heart valve, which unfortunately no one knows because it was overshadowed by him being one of the creators of the most successful advertising campaigns of the 21st century. The Old Spice Man Your Man Could Smell Like campaign.
Being crazy about the details and the craft is something that I think has gone away in advertising, and it's a shame because that's what made our Old Spice work.
Before that, when Craig should have been winning Nobel Prizes and collecting all kinds of grant money for his groundbreaking research, fighting degenerative muscular disease at a molecular level, it was completely overshadowed by the fact that he made a commercial where a man eats Skittles with his beard and another one starring a human pinata man. Later, his work advancing the cure for hand-foot-mouth disease was totally overshadowed by his tragic short film starring an old man who shook hands with a man on the bus and turned them into a pile of Skittles. And when Craig took a leave of absence from the medical sciences to focus his talents on creating hit advertising at Callan for Liquid Death and Nickelodeon, PBR, and Carl's Jr., it is estimated that human life expectancy dropped an average of 7.3 years. But Skittles and Old Spice sales soared by 46%, so it was all worth it.
I think that part of your job as a leader is that the creatives never feel the hardest parts of the job. Whatever it is, at least being opinionated, I think, is the best way.
In addition to his many boring medical awards, Craig has won two Emmys, two Cannes Lion Grand Prix, a Grandy, and a free Arby's Junior Roast Beef Sandwich at a school raffle. He also cured several forms of cancer, which no one knows about. So tune in to hear Jason Bagley and Dr. Craig Allen as they discuss how to be a world-class creative director and medical scientist.
What advice would you give to creatives presenting their ideas to CDs?
I would say...
It's Jason Bagley's advertising podcast. He interviews important people, it's true. But that doesn't mean that you're not important, 'cause he didn't choose to interview you. Maybe he was just planning to contact you to interview you on another day. Or maybe he doesn't have your email address. Every creature on the planet is important in their own special way. Cows, sharks, and gazelles deserve to be interviewed. Birds and whales each have a valid point. I mean, they're probably not as interesting to talk to as you, but you're less interesting than the person on this show. It's true, I'm not sure what my point is.
Welcome, everybody, to this episode of Bagley Talks to an Important Person. Before we get started, I want to have a word from our sponsors, which are not Athletic Greens. To be very clear, Athletic Greens is in no way connected to this podcast and may or may not have sent several cease and desist letters to us about trying to get sponsored from them. There are several other brands that also do not sponsor this podcast, but there is one that is sponsoring us today that I want to talk about. Bijan Mustardson, the greatest football-based mustard brand in the world. Thank you for sponsoring this episode of Bagley Talks to an Important Person. Go out there and get the best football-based mustard that's ever existed. And we may or may not have the founder of Bijan Mustardson right here in the studio today, Craig Allen.
Hi. I'm being told we are not sponsoring this episode. And we are sending a cease and desist letter currently. So I'm sorry about that.
You might want to collaborate with Athletic Greens attorneys.
Yeah, we were going to sponsor it, but then just a couple minutes ago, we actually got bumped to a better podcast with better viewership.
That actually makes a ton of sense.
I'm sorry to tell you. I'm sorry to be the one.
I wish you would have told me this before we started rolling film.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to put the Bijan Mustardson down here. In that case, Craig, welcome to Bagley Talks to an Important Person. Did you know before today that you were incredibly important?
I did not. No. In fact, I've been always told the opposite.
Congratulations.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Do I get a certificate?
You must be important. If you are not aware, Craig and I were partners for many years, running Old Spice together. So I want to start out with a little bit of history, a little game here called Fact or Fiction.
All right.
Craig has not seen these Fact or Fiction cue cards. We're just going to read it out.
Is there a prize?
There's no prize at all.
I'm out.
You can have the jar of Athletic Greens that we were unable to get sponsorship on.
Okay, great.
I'm going to read this, and you just tell us if this is fact or fiction, or feel free to expand on it if you wish.
Okay.
Fact or fiction. We had initially planned to both move to Austin, Texas, where we are right now, to start what is now Callen, but I broke up with you at a Zoop's restaurant, a soup-based fast food restaurant.
That is a fact. Yes, it was. It was a soup-based fast food restaurant, and it was all over a bowl, I believe, of tomato bisque.
Tomato bisque. That's a great soup.
Maybe a chicken panini on the side.
I mean, if you have to break up with somebody over soup, tomato bisque is pretty good.
I was cold in the feelings, but warm in the stomach.
All right. That one is true. That one is fact. Fact or fiction?
I think the name would have had to have changed.
Yeah, the name probably would not have been Callen.
No.
if it was a big relief.
Maybe Cabley.
It was a Cabley. That does have a ring.
It does.
We did talk about Ballon, which sounds like a whale fat of some sort.
Yeah, not healthy.
Thankfully, I bailed out, so we didn't have to figure out a name.
Mm-hmm. Soups.
Okay. Fact or fiction, before meeting April, you did have a passionate love affair with Condoleezza Rice.
That is fiction.
Really?
Unfortunately, yeah.
Well, I heard
very wrong. Very talented woman.
I heard wrong. Fact or fiction, to make production budgets stretch, on more than one occasion, we did sleep in the same bed in a business capacity, two businessmen sharing a bed to do business.
That is sadly also true. Yeah, not proud of it.
That is a fact.
Sometimes you got to go the extra mile to get the work done.
Sometimes it was a question of, do you want to have your own hotel room or do you want to shoot this extra scene? And for us, the choice was always, we want to shoot the extra scene and we will sleep in the same bed as businessmen.
Do you want to rent the turtle or do you want to sleep in separate rooms?
Again, always.
Rent the turtle.
Rent the turtle, sleep in the same bed as businessmen.
Yes.
It's
very,
really
very professional. It wasn't weird. This may come off as weird. It wasn't weird.
No, it was
very
straightforward.
We went feet to head.
We created what we call a hetero wall of pillows.
A pillow dam.
It's a pillow dam made for heterosexuals. And you just put it in between you and you just get business done that way.
Yeah. It actually was quicker. We could talk.
Yeah. We could work out script issues head to toe. It was fine.
I feel like this is getting off to a weird start.
We recommend it. So that one is fact.
Yeah.
All right. After seeing my work on Stag Canned Chili, Steven Spielberg asked me to mentor his teenage son. Fact or fiction?
Is that me or you?
That's about me, but you would know the answer.
I think that would be fiction.
That one is fiction. I'm surprised you knew that.
Yeah.
All right. Another bed-related fact or fiction. During productions, we often wrote or changed scripts on a hotel room bed surrounded by gross old room service food at 3 a.m.
That is definitely a fact.
That is a fact.
Yeah.
A lot of scripts were tweaked or changed or written entirely brand new.
Hotel rooms are small. There was nowhere else to sit.
Yeah. There's not a lot of working area.
No. And we took the pillow dam wasn't there yet.
No. You got to remove the pillow dam when you're concepting.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there was a lot of food.
Plans. That is essential. Yeah.
Last one, fact or fiction.
Cut.
In February of 2024, you and I are launching a Spanx competitor designed for middle-aged business executives.
I would say that's fiction so far.
It's a great idea.
I think it's not actually a bad
idea. It's a great idea.
I could use those right now. I don't know what kind of angles you're getting.
I'm going to set this one aside.
Yeah, actually put a star on that.
We need to go back to that one.
Let's just save that one.
All right. That's the first time we've ever done fact or fiction. I hope people enjoyed it.
Okay.
So here we are in Austin, Texas, came down to reunite and to go to the Texas BYU game. And also, turns out, the World Series game.
Yes.
Which is also, very serendipitously, our states. So our schools are battling it out on Saturday. And on Friday, our states are battling it out.
That is true. I hope to demolish you on all fronts. And me being the team that I have nothing to do with.
In many ways, I hope for the same thing because you get far more upset by losing than I do.
I do. Yeah. It might destroy our friendship.
In fact, when we were partners, I would follow the Texas games over the weekend because I wanted to know how bad of a mood you were going to be in on Monday.
Yeah.
When Texas would lose, I'd be like, oh, dang it. Craig is going to be in such a bad mood.
That is sadly true. My family would attest to that.
Okay. So what I would love, and I think our listeners would love, and watchers with their eyeballs, is to hear you talk about your creative process. And like, do you happen to have a slide deck that maybe talks about that you could share?
I know that you love a good deck with no pictures and only words from your copywriting background. Favorite. So that's what I've prepared here today. Yes, here it is. I assume it's popping up now on
Craig's
your podcast.
Guide to Doing Great Work.
100% guaranteed results, foolproof, or your money back. Bit of an asterisk there. Actually, it's not 100% guaranteed in any way. It may or may not be helpful at all, and it's very much foolproof, no refund. the lawyers asked me to put that last part in. So there you go.
So we should listen to everything you're about to say with a grain of salt.
Yeah, like take it to heart, but be weary.
Will do.
The first one, I would say I put gather the facts, which sounds very official. And I think by that, I mean, when you're in a briefing, ask questions. Like I feel like a lot of times creatives, you have to do the briefing. It's part of the process, especially when you're just a creative and not a CD or above. And you just get through it. But asking questions, making sure that everybody's working as hard as you are as a creative. And if the brief sucks, say something. So if you see something, say something. It's not just about the subway system. It's about briefs as well. I'm always surprised. Go to the website, like read any stuff you can. I know it sounds stupid, but I don't know how many times I'll be working with creatives and they're like, oh, I didn't know it did that. I'm like, did you load the website? And oftentimes the answer is no. And then lastly, do they have any historical stuff that you can look through? Do you watch all the spots from way back, because sometimes the answer is like right there in front of your face. I know that was the fact on KFC, which I didn't work on, but the Colonel was just sitting there in the vault waiting to be launched out. I think on Old Spice, we used a lot of heritage stuff, like kind of picking pieces out and bringing it forward. So I think a lot of times your work could be easier than you're allowing it to be. So that's what I mean by gather the facts. Yeah.
Gather those facts.
Gather the facts. Drain the tank.
Sounds like an obscene phrase.
It's not. It is about, I think for me, the process for me and that I always encourage is like, get a brief, go drop everything out of your brain bucket. Like, just empty the tank. No bad ideas. Just write it all down. Make little notes so you kind of remember what you're even thinking. If we're laughing, I would write out a little more notes just so I could remember why we're laughing, because there's nothing worse than coming a few days later and being like, I have here cat, scarf, pet turtle, and I don't know what that means.
I feel like we were laughing, but I can't remember why.
Yes. So I think it's really important to just get the bad stuff out. So what I do is just brain dump over 24 hours, the first day or so, depending on how much time you have. Write down everything, close the book, work till you're dead, basically. Go to sleep, wake up, read those ideas, realize that 99% of them are horrible, even though you thought they were good yesterday, and then move on. And I think that's something that goes a lot of times. Sometimes I think you just got to get past the first round ideas and the bad ideas to actually start working, because some of those are just easy and they're bad because they're first thoughts.
Yeah.
So dumping everything out so that you can get to something actually more interesting is essential.
And you can kind of, you kind of end up repeating that process, right? Like if you have more time, you're, it's just like brain dump, then come back and look at stuff.
That's right. Be brutal. So I say this only because it's harder when you're younger, it's harder than when you're more seasoned. And I think the important thing about this is when you write down those ideas, being brutal on your own ideas, you write down 50, probably two of them are worth actually working on further, you know, and it's not just like, just because you had an idea doesn't mean you have to blow it out to its full capacity.
Yeah.
Right. And I think if you think about, we're probably taking five ideas to a meeting. So when you put that lens on it, like be brutal on your work, it'll save you time when you're not just blowing out everything, being like, I don't really like this idea, but I want to give it a shot. So I'll work on write it out, which takes an hour, and you just wasted that time.
And when you say be brutal, you're talking about not during the brain dump, but after the brain dump,
like after the
go brain home, dump. Sleep on it, come back, then be brutal.
Yes.
But like very importantly, I'm guessing you'll agree with this. Don't be brutal when you're doing the brain dump. Just no judgment. Just
that's right.
Get it all down.
This is past the brain dump. And I think also we always said that it's well known. I didn't come up with this. I wish I did. But it takes just as much time to complete a bad idea as it does a good idea. So keep that in mind, because there was several times where we presented scripts, not we, maybe us, but me and other partners or whoever, and even partners stuff that's, ooh, better? Okay. Okay. Oh, here it is. Oh, that's nice. Okay. All right. But then can you see my mustache that I just grew out for this podcast?
Yeah, you can see the mustache.
Okay,
it's
cool.
Looking good. It's actually like a big arrow pointing to the mustache.
Where was I? Oh, bad ideas. When you're presenting ideas, if you're not completely happy on them, know that you could be spending the next month to 6 months of your life working on that thing. So for a CD, it's always never present anything you wouldn't want to make. Hopefully everybody knows that rule.
Yeah.
But even as a creative, there are many times we present a script where I'm like, I'm so on this one, but let's just present it and see what they say. And then you're flying somewhere and you're working on it and you're missing other briefs because you're working on a thing that you didn't love in the first place. And now you're really hating yourself.
Yeah.
So be brutal with your concepts, but also be brutal with what you present, because you may have to make it, which cannot always be the best thing.
I think let's talk a little bit more about that, because I think this is a big mistake that especially young creatives make, because they're so desperate to get something made,
right?
And they feel like the validation and the success of like, well, I want to get something the CDs will approve, because then I guess I'm
do
validated
good.
And
yeah.
Then they'll think I'm valuable. And they're so focused on just getting something sold and produced that they're not thinking about what you just said, which is you're really not helping your career by going and spending 3 to 6 months producing a very mediocre piece of work. Meanwhile, you're missing better opportunities. You're not really getting anything that's helping your portfolio.
Right.
So it really is, in most cases, better to not produce work if it's going to be bad work.
That's right. And that goes all the way back to concepting, because if you spend 3 hours writing out ideas that you were just kind of okay on and they end up being just kind of okay again, you just wasted all that time. So it's being brutal even from conceptual stage one. This was just more about when you get stuck. Everybody gets stuck. I get stuck. Jason, I assume you get stuck occasionally, maybe.
I've never been stuck.
Okay. And I think for us, it's probably something we talked about a lot, so I'd be surprised if you haven't covered it before, but the idea of when you get stuck, just pivoting yourself immediate right into something different. If you're writing all dialogue scripts, trying a purely visual direction, if you're doing something, could it be a play? Could you launch it to space? You know, find out. Like, don't allow yourself to just get stuck and be like, come to a meeting and say, sorry, it just didn't work. Like, just keep pivoting until you find something. And sometimes it's just working yourself out of a rut.
Yeah. If you're feeling stuck, don't try to do a 10% different idea. Do like a 180 or 360. Then you'd just be back at the same idea. Let's make it 180.
Yeah, I think that's better.
A 180 degree different idea will sometimes that idea is doesn't end up being good, but it just gets your brain out of the rut that it was in.
Right.
I want to ask you for one quick favor. Turns out making a podcast takes a lot of time and money. So if you're enjoying these episodes, the best way that you can support the podcast is by clicking that subscribe button and the notification bell so you don't miss future episodes. So please do us a favor and click those buttons right now. Okay, let's do the podcast. Bye.
Make it perfect. This is kind of more to speak at the end. So the thought process is we were always kind of very crazy about the details. And I think that unfortunately now we have shorter timelines. We have less money. In COVID, we couldn't travel, which was, I think, very detrimental to the work of everybody that everybody was doing. We were, as you know, I was crazy, still am crazy in the visual effects rooms and in the edits and even the shoots. So I think I always encourage my teams and me. I've done it. I've learned from early on from my CDs to you show up to shoots with alt lines. You show up with shorter scripts inevitably when you get there and everything runs long. So you're not scrambling on the shoot trying to rewrite, you know, or whatever it is. You, even in stunts and stuff, you're working. Even when you sell an idea, keep working and developing it and doing, you know, making it better and better and better. Yeah. So it's making it. Being crazy about the details and the craft is something that I think has gone away in advertising a little bit. And it's a shame because that's what made even our Old Spice work and everything. Like we relentlessly worked on the details.
We were, what's the phrase? Produce it with the vigilance of a possessed psychopath. I remember a time with you where we were doing effects. We were at the mill, I think. I think it was maybe with Tim. I'm not sure, but
yeah.
And you went up. You're like just picking everything apart as you always did, and you're like, that bird. I'm sorry, you guys. That bird just looks. It looks so fake still. And Tim was like, that's a real bird. That was shot. That was on set.
The comment's the same.
The comment still applies. That real bird looks super fake.
Tim was also the one, I believe it was Tim, that he said that I was worse in a visual effects room than David Fincher, which I told him I wasn't sure if that was a compliment or not.
It was both.
I think it was both. It hurt and was awesome.
It hurt, and I've never been more proud.
I always use the so what method. To me, this is like the most important thing that I've done since, I think, forever. And I try to teach it as much as I can. And I think it's something that we don't do a lot very often these days. And it's literally just asking yourself, like, so what? Why would anyone care about what you're making? You know, it's that your fridge has a screen on the front of it. So what? These new tires are new and improved tread. So what? It's always trying to come at it from a very, make it matter to people in some way and coming at it from a very human way. I think a lot of times we forget because we're marketing, it's our job. We're trying really hard to solve the problem is that we forget that we're humans too. Like we go buy chips, you're advertising chips. When you go to the grocery store, what would make you care about these chips? Yeah. You know, and I think if it doesn't apply to you, it probably, you have a mom, you have a father, you have maybe siblings, you have a significant other. Like somebody in your life fits the brief. And so I always try to take it to my Aunt Janice. My Aunt Janice does this and appeals to her. Why in the world would she ever care about this thing? So I think that's so important in concepting is making sure it's human, making it matter. I'll give you an example. When we did Smell Like a Man, Guy on the Horse, Old Spice Spot, the brief of Makes You Smell Like a Man is something we had worked on several times in several different briefs. So this Makes You Smell Like a Man, especially at this point, so what? Who cares? This one was due to great strategy Britton and team did. They found out women were buying body wash and no dudes buy their own body wash. Super, super key, obviously, to this piece of work. But instead of telling a woman it makes your man smell better, who cares? We told her, this will make your man smell better than he actually is in real life, which is probably disappointing in a lot of ways and underwhelming. So not only that, but it will smell like the best man of your dreams, like the perfect man. Yeah. Now, all of a sudden, women are like, okay, I'm listening. You know, it made it matter in a way that it, instead of just being like, smell like a man, here's a guy in a hot tub with a bazooka shooting hot dogs. There's many ways to do funny jokes about smelling like a man. That succeeded because we made it matter to women, or moms for mom song, which we also did, which is, you know, moms buy all the body spray for their kids. So this makes you smell like a man. The moms are like, who cares? That doesn't matter to me. In fact, it's maybe detrimental because I don't want my kid to smell like a man. Wait a second. That actually does matter to moms. So we did the spot where it's, you spray this on, people smell like a man. That's, a mom doesn't want their kid to smell like a man. They want to stay a kid. So again, it's finding that thing of being honest with yourself as a human, not a marketer. At some point, forget that you're a marketer and be like, why the crap do I care about this thing?
Yeah. I think so often we're too obedient and we just get the brief and we're like, well, there's the brief. That's what the client wants us to say this. Strategy told us to say this. All right, I guess we're just going to go say this. What you're saying is like, ask yourself, wait, why does anyone care about that? And keep asking it until you get to something that actually is an interesting insight or that somebody's going to care.
Right.
But if you ask, so what? And the answer is like, there is no, like someone's just not, no one's going to care about this. Then keep pushing and pushing until you get to something and work with the strategist or whatever, till you get to something that you think people are actually going to care about.
And to be honest, as we're talking, like, I'm like, this is what you should say to briefs too. Again, when I'm talking about working with your strategist and making sure that you're getting something, you're starting from a good place. When you get a brief, if your alarms are going off that I don't care, say, be like, so what? You know, like, yes, I get that these chips are delicious. So what? You know, like, help me get to an insight, because a lot of times we just start at facts and briefs. This is a super safe tire with great tread. All right, kids, go. Not kids, people. Go work on stuff. And if you're like, so what? What does that mean? That means safety. That means, you know, assurance. Whatever it means, something that matters to me other than, because what doesn't matter to me is new tread. I don't care what that means. Another quick example for you, when we worked on Samsung, they were doing a slew of ads that were black, you know, products rotating on a cool black background, looks super cool, super sleek. And it'd be like waterproof, great camera, you know, whatever it may be. And I think we did a good job on that as being like, so what? And no one cared. So we did spots that were, hey, it's a great camera, but it also takes the best low light photos ever. And guess what? You spend half of your time in the dark at night. And that's usually when the best things happen.
Yeah. And just to pick that apart, what came to us was it takes the best pictures of any phone at night. And we were like, so what? Who cares?
That's why just is feature. That important?
And we had to keep asking, so what, until we got to, oh, all the coolest things happen at night. Yeah. That was the insight.
And so just wouldn't pointing you want to?
Yeah. Just pointing out in the spot all the best things, all the coolest things, all the funnest things.
Right.
Happen at night, so wouldn't you want a phone that can capture that?
All the best stuff happens in the dark. There's dancing and music in the dark. People are younger and better looking in the dark. See? Bowling is less sad in the dark. Your most valuable blackmail material will happen in the dark. People wear their most stylish and glamorous clothes in the dark. Food becomes more expensive and romantic in the dark. People gain an irrational sense of invincibility in the dark. And if you're well below average looking, your only chance of kissing an attractive person is, yep, in the dark. So if all this good stuff happens in the dark, wouldn't you want a camera that can capture things in the dark? The new Galaxy S7 Edge with low light camera.
And that's an example of just like...
Same thing with water, right? It was a waterproof phone. I know that's cool, but so what? And then we pointed out, you know, the world's what, 78% water or 76%, whatever the stat was. And that you live around water, it rains, you spill stuff because you're human. Oh, wait, if you live around this much water and expose this much water, maybe you should have a phone that could get wet.
Yeah.
You live on a planet that is mostly water. Sometimes water just starts falling out of the sky. Some people sleep on water. People think it's funny to push others into water.
And smart people like this person say there's about to be even more water.
There's about to be even more water.
When water freezes, people play on it. When it bubbles, people sit in it. When it moves, people slide down it. In fact, there's so much water out there, why in the world would you get a phone that can't get wet? The new water-resistant Galaxy S7 Edge.
So it's that what game. And I do think you can always do a very emotional spot, a very funny thing, a great stunt that connects with people, whatever it may be. But if it doesn't matter to people, it's like a flash in the pan. You know, you may get somebody to laugh or cry or interact with you, and then they forget what the brand was. In a month, they're like, I don't remember even seeing that thing. That's a big problem.
Yeah.
This is a thing. Make sure it's stupid smart. This is something that we talk a lot about at Callen. And we always say that we try to specialize in the stupidest, smartest ideas. And those are the ideas that are so simple that you feel stupid for not coming up with them in the first place. And if you think about the ideas in the last year that you've been jealous of, they're all that. You're like, oh my gosh, that's so simple. How did we not think of that? That's the best ideas. So it's like so simple, it's stupid, and it's smart in its stupidness, right? So it's, I think that's something we kind of specialize in, and making it, a lot of that, what we just talked about, making it matter to people is a way to make things stupid smart, you know, making it, and sometimes that's just entertainment. A couple of examples I would say is for Freedom Solar, which is a solar company. We worked with them and we were going to do an Earth Day thing, obviously solar energy. Very good for the earth. Earth Day, people pick up trash. So what? Like, you have solar panels? Okay, who cares? How do you make that the power of solar matter to people on Earth Day? So we made a 7-foot wide Roomba and we rolled it across Austin and some other cities, and it picked up trash throughout the city and held up traffic. It was kind of a mess. It ran into cars, all kinds of stuff. And people,
and it was solar powered. It was a solar
all powered. Solar powered. And it, people took pictures of it. People were like, what is this? And be like, y'all running this off solar? Holy crap. And it did a good cause of cleaning up the earth, using solar to help the earth in a way that you could have made an ad that meant like, solar power reduces 50% of your energy consumption, which helps the earth. People don't care about that. So we put it in a way that was entertaining. That's a bit stupid, but it's smart in what it was trying to achieve.
So you're saying that the fact that this podcast is actually 100% powered by solar power, nobody cares.
I think they care because you're making them with your smart words and your decent haircut. But it's the same thing, you know, in Freedom, we also did some television spots, and instead of just showing that you can get solar power and you can do stuff with it, the so what was, well, in Texas, where they have a big footprint, it's hot. It was 100-something degrees every day. So we did an ad of like, so what? It's, you can run your air conditioner 24 hours a day at 60 degrees without repercussions if you wanted to. So instead of just communicating that fact, we did these power ballads that people sang, and it was about these people, and they're just regular people. They turn on the switch, and all of a sudden they feel powerful because they have all this power. They can run their air conditioner. They can do all of these things, run all of their devices at the same time. Another one was for Lone Star. They wanted to make a sign. It's a beer, Texas beer, national beer of Texas. They wanted to make it, have a bar, bigger bar presence. So they're like, make a neon sign. That's what you're supposed to do. That's the playbook. So what? There's a billion neon signs. So we made one in Texas. We have a giant mosquito problem. They were the worst beings ever made by God, I think, is the mosquito. Everybody hates them. So we made a neon sign that actually killed mosquitoes. So most of the Texas bars, South bars, have an outdoor patio. So we made this big sign and toured it across Texas. When mosquitoes flew into it, they got killed. And suddenly people were like, I love Lone Star. Like, that matters. And so you take something that's pretty routine, you apply the so what, you could come up with something that actually made that a much better idea.
Yeah.
Last example I'll give is for Pabst Blue Ribbon. We were trying to make, they don't have the money that a Bud Light, a Miller Light, the big beer people play with. So instead of doing a Super Bowl thing or a Oscars thing or whatever it may be, something big, we decided, we came to them. It wasn't a brief. We said, we should try to own the thing that no beer company is trying to own, which is Easter. And no one's trying to own Easter. So it's like, how do you make PBR matter to people on Easter? Again, I would hope that this would be stupid smart. It was to us. It's a stupid idea that was pretty smart strategically. We got artists to paint these beautiful kegs and make them amazing, one of one works of art. We went and hid them in parks, I think in 8 cities across the US. And then we had clues and people would find them. If you find the keg, you keep the beer. So it was like the Easter keg hunt. And it was written up in Forbes and stuff. And again, we could have just done a post, or we could have done something the next week and not done an Easter, but doing something that mattered to people and that people could interact with made it great and, you know, had a bigger legs than it probably should have.
Yeah, that's cool.
So I put this helpful recap slide in that I think makes it very easy.
Tell us what you told us.
Start smart. Get the bad out. Don't allow yourself to get stuck. Work hard. Never settle. Be stupid smart. Don't suck. Have fun. Easy.
Everything you need to be successful right there.
Just go down this list. It's an easy Craig's Notes way to advertising.
You got it all there. I love it.
Well, thank you.
All right. So thank you for sharing that. Let's get into some more questions. Perhaps. Let's talk about the importance of mentors, because something I've always talked about. When I say always, I mean one time I said this, that I've never seen a great creative, like a world-class creative, who did not have amazing mentors.
Yeah.
I've never seen that.
No.
Like everyone who is like at the top of the industry, if you look, they had amazing mentors. They had people that they worked with that taught them, that they learned a ton from. And I know that's the case with you.
Yeah.
And sometimes those mentors are not super fun to work with, or maybe even you don't like them that much at the time, but let's talk about some of that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's true. Like, you know, especially in your early years, like if you're not under somebody, great. I don't know how you continue to develop, you know, you're kind of learning on the job. I was lucky when I got to Shia Day right out of school. We had a great group of people to learn from. Dallas Itzen was the top kind of person at Shite at the time, and I learned a lot from her. John Petrulis, he was a copywriter there. So he sat a couple cubes over from me. Simon McCoy, who ended up being a great director, still is. So I got to bounce around and learn from people, which was mentors as CDs, but also just the creative, the senior creatives around me, which now are like powerhouses. So I got lucky there. But I think when Scott, Ian, and Jerry came into Shiat, that's kind of when everything changed. They taught me like it's okay to be weird, and kind of brought out what I would think is what was more true to my natural sense of humor, and fostered a place where it was okay to let that run crazy. I don't think I've ever worked harder than I did at Shiat Day in those days. Like our creative department, very talented. Everybody is still in advertising and still doing great, and they're all heads of all the different agencies now. But for Skittles, for instance, we probably wrote, and this is no exaggeration, 150 scripts for every one that you ever saw produced, like 13 rounds sometimes of work. And that was brutal. And there was definitely days that I didn't love Scott and Jerry as much as others, for sure. But it taught me how to write, like a crash course in writing. It taught me how to craft things. Looking back, I'm super grateful for that, even though at the time it was pretty hellish. I'm glad I went through it. I wouldn't want to go through it again, but it's that kind of stuff of how to be brutal, you know, going back to that, and then how to just keep push through to good ideas. And when you're young, I think that you like, sometimes I'll have creatives come, you know, throughout, even when we were at White and stuff, they would bring 4 ideas and they've been working for 4 days. And you're like, what happened? And they're like, well, we got 4 ideas. And you're like, you thought that was enough? Like, that's definitely not enough. You're young. Like, you should be coming up with, usually when they're a young creative, they come up with too many ideas and they don't know how to self-edit. If you're coming in with 4, that's tough. You know, so I think it's like that taught me how to kind of work.
And they just, and Scott and Ian and Jerry just had brutally high standards, I assume.
Brutal.
And yeah, like it was next to impossible to get something up to that standard. But because you wanted to, and because you saw their portfolio, you knew they knew a thing or two about making great work, that it gave you something to push towards, right? Like that you had to try to get.
You had to get better fast.
Yeah.
And I think, a lot of people fell out of that creative department because they couldn't keep up, or they just got exhausted or whatever. And the ones that pushed through, I think we all came out the other side of being like, we know how to do this now, and we know how to do it very effectively. Because, and also I think we always joked, Eric Coleman, who was one of my partners, Ashley Davis, another partner there, we always joked that we wrote every joke imaginable. So even now I'm like, I wonder if there's anything in the Skittles joke Rolodex that we could find. But yeah, I mean, it was, I think, the top of comedy writing, at least for those years, where it was, you had to beat your bosses and you had to make them laugh. And that was really hard to do.
Yeah.
So it made us better.
So a couple things that maybe I take from that is, one, as a creative, if you're working under creative directors that are pushing you really hard and maybe to a point that you kind of resent them and you don't love it, but they have really high standards and they're pushing you to become better, you're probably going to be grateful for that later.
Yeah.
But on the flip side with the CD, sometimes by the time you got to me at Wyden, you had so much respect for Scott Nehan. Like I was a young CD and you would be like, well, Scott Nehan do this. Scott Nehan.
Jerry said this.
And I was like, oh gosh, I got to live up to those guys. But it's not necessarily a popularity contest to be a CD. Like, you don't have to always be loved or liked, rather, by your creatives. Like, it's, if you have to choose, it's better to help them grow and to push them than to be their best friend.
Absolutely. And that's hard. You know, it is part of the job. I'm like, you're getting paid more money because the job is harder. Yeah. You know, it's sometimes you miss that, like, I just want to write scripts. I just want to come up with a cool stunt. I just want to do a fun activation. It's like,
I miss the days when everybody liked me.
Yes. Yeah. It's like, you got to be okay with being hated and knowing that people are walking out being like, F those guys. And you're just like, but then someday they love you for it. Listen, yeah. You know, it's like, it's just part of the process, and we all get better for that hard work. I think when I got to Wyden, I worked under Mark Fitzloff and Hal Curtis, Colleen, Susan Hoffman. You know, it was like learning from such different points of view. Was
there anybody else amazing that you worked under that
can't
really
think of a
taught
single
you
person
this that taught you just
have worked
not only
under.
How to do great work, but just how to be a great human being?
No one comes to
kind
mind.
Of somebody that sits right in the center of your heart.
Now, did I say Fitzloff? I did.
Yeah, you said him already.
And
is
Hal
there anybody
Curtis,
else?
Colleen,
anybody else at all?
Susan Hoffman. No one's
okay.
Bagley. Yes. Bagley and Baldwin were one of my first CDs after Fitz at Wyden. But I think all of that comes to, I think Wyden taught me how to be a lot more well-rounded and versatile. Like, it was nice to work with such people with different styles of work, you know, and I think I took something different from each of those people. And, you know, Susan would come in and you'd be working on something for weeks and she'd come in and say one thing and blow up the whole presentation. Yeah. And you'd be like, are you freaking kidding me? And then you walk away and be like, oh, that's actually kind of genius. Dang it. So it was kind of like, I think that if Chiat taught me how to work to death, to greatness, I think Wyden taught me how to be a more versatile, well-rounded creative. Yeah. And it also, by that point, I was a little more senior, so I knew how to get to ideas faster. So I tried to work on a lot of different things, which was really beneficial.
All right. What I'd like to get into now is the huge, huge mistakes that you've made as a creative director and a chief creative officer.
I don't know if we have enough time.
We got all the time. I booked this studio for the rest of the week.
Is it Kleenexes or anything in here?
Yeah. What are some things that people could learn from the mistakes that you've made and that you see other creative leaders making?
Yeah. I mean, I think when I first became a CD, I got two things. I wrote too much. Like, I forget when you started, it was just like, it's harder. It's a lot harder work to get other people to do great work than it will ever be for you to do great work for yourself.
Yeah.
And in fact, we had a bunch of creatives over the years that we promoted to CDs that were like, it's too much work. Like, I hate it.
I want to go back to being a
creative. Just want to make stuff and I don't want to have to talk to people and deal with feelings and all that stuff. Which is fine, but that is part of it. So I think in the beginning, I would just be like, oh gosh, it's so awkward. A lot of times you're peers with your people and then you get promoted. Yesterday you were eating lunch with them, complaining about the CDs. And the next day you are the CD and all of a sudden you're not going to lunch because it's awkward, which you get over in time. But in the beginning, and it's always easier to be like, instead of trying to get somebody there and work with them to get there, I would just be like, it's good. You just go try it. And then I would just write the scripts and be like, oh, I already wrote this for you. It's great. And they'd be like, what? So in the beginning, I think that I probably avoided confrontation and just did everything myself, which makes no one better.
Passive aggressive. Passive aggressive.
I think it's a little bit of laziness too, probably a bit booked in because you, like I said, it's harder to get somebody there, especially when they're struggling. It's you and you know what to do. Yeah. It's hard to be like, don't do it. And I think somebody, it might have been the great Jeff Williams or somebody once told us, maybe Hal Curtis, if you're not making the work more than 10% better, shut your mouth. You know, and I think that would be another thing is we would constantly, our eye would constantly like try to change everything. Like I think a problem that I see a lot is when you're a CD, when you're a creative, you always want credit. Right. You want to know, make sure people know you're good, you're talented, you're doing the right things. When you're a CD, it takes a minute to realize when others do great under you, it shows you're doing well. It doesn't have to be you. Yeah. So I think something I struggled with in the beginning, and I see a lot of new CDs struggle with, they'd be like, they bring in a script. Hey, the script's great. And they go, yeah, the team sucked. I had to write it. That's not good. You know, it's like, if anything, it's like, yeah, the team did great. Making sure that you're giving credit where it is due. And even if you sometimes, as you know, sometimes we would be a little more heavy-handed and the team would know it, but we had to get the work done or whatever it is. And then over time, it's funny when it's successful, people tend to forget those things, but that's okay. You're a CD. Your name is going on everything.
Yeah.
You don't have to make sure that everybody knows that you're good and you're smart. They already know that.
You wrote it also.
Yes, you're there. So I think that's a big problem is making sure to know that you don't have to be the center star.
When you become a CD, you immediately have to have 50 times more awkward conversations than you did as a creative.
Yeah.
And you're, like you said, yesterday they were your peers and your friends, and today you're killing their work,
right,
and telling them it's not up to, or you should be telling them like, hey, this didn't meet the standard. And I think we probably both struggled with that in the early days of, I definitely was like a born pleaser. Like I want everyone to be happy. I want everybody to like me. I want everybody to be having a good time.
Right.
And very non-confrontational. And what you learn is that that's not helping anybody. Creatives don't like that. They can tell that you're dancing around things. They can tell that you're not being direct. Right. Creatives would much prefer that you just be blunt and tell it how it is. And they may not like the feedback, but I promise they prefer that over passive aggressiveness and like days and days of kind of unclear direction when they know that you're probably not that happy with something. You just got to get over that pretty quickly of like, hey, people are not going to like me sometimes.
Yeah.
And they're going to go and complain about me, like just like I did about my creative directors, and just get over it and just put your focus on the work and like, what do I got to do to make the work better? I may not be popular in the meantime, but if I make the work better, everyone's going to be happy.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to.
That was actually my second point is like, be okay with being unliked. You know, it's like, yeah, you have to be okay and comfortable with the fact that people hate you. Always remember, we always say to the creatives, make me the bad guy to the client. I'm okay with being a bad guy. You can be the good guy or girl, you know, and let me be the bad face. Let me be the kind of mean person.
Yeah.
And I think that that stuff goes a long way when you, it doesn't work when there's a big group meeting and somebody goes, wow, Craig and Jason, great job on the scripts. And you go, thanks. If the creatives are all there, if you go, well, yeah, they did a great job. So-and-so and so-and-so really killed it on this round. They'd be like, the account team, whoever said that, it's like, oh, cool. They don't care. But the creatives are like, whoa, like that was cool. You know, and that goes a long way.
They're going to hate you if you don't do that. And
I've been in those situations.
And that's not
sure
a good.
You have too. It's like where it's, especially even in press, right? Like if you're getting interviewed, making sure that you're shouting out the strategist, the account team, the actual team goes a long way. Cause I remember you'd read those and you'd be like, man, they didn't even mention me. I'd killed myself for 2 weeks and left my family for a month to make this, you know, stunt drive through pop-up store. And they didn't even say anything. And that just over time wears, it's like a cancer.
Yeah. Hey everybody, if you're interested in making better work and would like to know exactly how my teams and I at Wieden & Kennedy and now at Aalto have been making award-winning work for the past 20 years on brands like Nike, Old Spice, KFC, and others, I have what has been called the industry's premier creative coaching and mentorship program. I didn't call it that, but other people did, and then I just said it into this microphone just now. I've taken almost 700 creatives through my program so far, and they have an average 5-star rating. Is that 5 out of 10? If that's 5 out of 10, that's a really bad rating. Oh, it's 5 out of 5. It's 5 out of 5, everybody. That's an A+. These programs are not for everyone, but if you qualify, I will personally teach you exactly, step-by-step, how to rapidly start doing the best work of your life. I have sessions starting in 1 week, and nearly every session so far has sold out. So if you are interested in grabbing one of the final remaining spots, you can apply at the link below. I hope to see you there.
Something I talk a lot about is that the key, every creative wants to know, how do you sell great work? That's like the biggest question that people have, probably more so than even how do you come up with great work, is how do you sell great work? And the first step and the key to unlocking, there's many different things that you have to do and there's techniques, but you've got to get the client to trust you first and foremost. If you don't get the client to trust you and to see you as a real partner, you're not going to go anywhere. So what are some of the ways, like how do you've consistently sold great work and gotten it produced. So obviously you might know one or two things about how to get clients to trust you. What are some of the things that you do?
Making sure you have a good relationship. Like the day you can stop treating clients as clients and just as like we're working together, you know, because as advertising, it's like clients are bad and agencies are great. And when you realize like that's not true, it helps, you know? So when you have a good relationship and you talk to them and they, especially when you get them one-on-one, you get them out of a meeting, because a lot of times they're trying to be a boss too. So they're in a meeting with 50 people and they're like, well, the thing is the report shows this or whatever. And then when you get them on the phone, they're like, I don't know, man, I'm just trying and I'm really struggling because of this happened yesterday. And we're really, this is a big thing that's come up. That's a big problem for us. And when you kind of learn what the real problems are, and then you show that you're like, well, hey, I can help you with that. Like, let us, if that's the problem, before we go to your boss, tell me what is going to be the problems and let's make it bulletproof together to make sure that there is no problems. Let's get ahead of it. And they're like, whoa, awesome. As opposed to us versus them.
Yeah.
That's a key. And I think, you know, I would say another mistake when we talked about mistakes in the beginning, I was more of a Michael Jordan thing where I'm like, you let the work do the talking. Like, I don't have to do anything else. Let's do a couple of setup slides and let's just get into the work and they'll see how amazing it is and they'll know there's no way they can't buy it. And that's just not true. It's like when you realize that when you use the account team and the strategy team as assets, not speed bumps, it's when the work really gets truly good. And when you work with them to kind of find the problems with it. Jess Monzi, who is great, David Hughes, who is my MD now, they're both fantastic. I think coming from the Wieden School of Account People, good account people class.
Yeah.
we would work with them. I mean, when we worked with Jess, we would go to her and be like, what's wrong with this? And she'd be like, well, let me tell you the ways. And then we, probably me more than you, would be like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, gosh, she's so wrong. And it's so frustrating. We'd walk away. I'd be mad. We'd be frustrated. And then we'd be like, but dang, she does have a pretty good point on that one. And I guess we could tweak this because that actually makes it a lot better. And oh, dang it, she's right again. And I find that too, when you actually use them as assets, not just here's the work, go sell it. Here's the work, set up the call, helps the client too. And I think when you make it bulletproof, you work with a full team, you get to the client one-on-one. That all is good. I would give you an example of taking calculated risks that you know will pay off is the biggest, fastest way. For instance, we had done Smells Like a Man, Guy on the Horse Spot. Everything in the advertising playbook said, make another Isaiah spot right away. And
forever.
Forever.
Never make anything except
never change an anything. Isaiah spot. Make the same words, just have them wear different clothes. And they weren't wrong. That's what the playbook says. And we said it was a different market. We were advertising to younger people. And we said, we think here is an Isaiah spot, but we think the answer is not Isaiah. We think we should change it up. And we think that you shouldn't, Old Spice should be bigger than any one Old Spice guy. There should be multiple Old Spice men. And they're like, what are you talking about? He was on Oprah yesterday. Did you guys not see when he was on Oprah? Oh no, we saw it, but you're bigger than that. And you can, we can make you more successful by building around it. So we presented him Terry Crews campaign.
It wasn't Terry Crews at the time, but it was a crazy muscular
bodybuilder person. And they were like, what? Janet Allgaier, who's one of our best clients of all time, still friends with her to this day. She was like, what are you doing? Why would we do this? And we didn't have a great meeting originally. Remember, she went home, she told her kid, who was her son, who was 14 at the time, 12, I don't know, teenager. And he was like, this is the funniest thing I've ever seen. She came in the next day, she goes, let's do it. Everything says we shouldn't do it, but you guys, I trust you. I believe in you. I showed it to my son. He said it was hilarious. I'm going to roll the dice. But if it doesn't work out, you're in trouble. And so we knew that, and luckily that blew up. And then when it blew up, Janet was like, okay, we're ride or die forever. I think we all handcuffed ourselves together after that, you know? So taking calculated risks, trusting your gut, sticking with it, when it works out, they will trust you forever.
Yeah. You got to build that initial foundation of trust so that you can take that first leap of faith with them and push them past their comfort zone. And if that works, you're going to, everything's going to start getting easier.
And I mean, keep in mind, Old Spice, even before Eric and I joined the Old Spice team, there'd been a year of work. Like, it's a lot of times the trust, especially with bigger clients, it's not that you do that on day one.
No,
it's a slow process of little wins along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. What advice would you give to creatives presenting their ideas to CDs? And I guess we could also add or CDs and creatives presenting their ideas to clients. But let's start with creatives presenting their ideas to CDs. What would you tell them?
Self-editing. You know, like, I think whenever you bring in too many ideas, everybody gets tired. And by the end of it, nothing good happens. I always appreciate opinionated people. It doesn't always mean that I agree with you at the end of the day, but I always respect your opinions. And I'd prefer that over being like, here's 20 ideas. I don't know if any of them are good. I don't know. Just let me know. Like, that never is good. So I think coming in with confidence, and again, they're not always going to agree with you, but coming in with confidence saying, here's what I think. I think these are our best ones. We struggled on this one. Here's some other thoughts, whatever it is. At least being opinionated, I think, is the best way, and being open to feedback and knowing that ideally they're on your side and they're trying to make it better, not make it worse.
I love people with opinions. I love creatives that have like a strong point of view. You don't have to always. Like, sometimes you're like, hey, I think this might be good. I don't know, but what do you think? And that's fine too. But if they feel really strongly about something, again, you may not agree with it, but it's great. One of my Creative Mega Machine sessions this week, there was a creative director. We did a little exercise where I showed him the Guinness surfer spot, mm-hmm. and I had them kind of break it down. Mm-hmm. And when I joined their group, she had never seen the Guinness surfer spot. I had her, what did you think? What's your breakdown? She's like, well, first of all, I hated it. And I was like, I love that she hates the Guinness Surfer Spot and that she had the confidence to say it, like one of the most beloved spots of all time. She didn't like it. More power to her.
Yeah.
And I think just like be strong in your opinion. You're kind of hired for your taste and your sensibility. And as a junior, that's going to have to get refined and it's going to get better.
Right.
But it's part of your value is just how you see things and what your point of view is. I would also add to presenting to creative directors and to clients, so many creatives, when they're presenting scripts, have way too much stage direction.
Yeah. Like, make it simple.
There's nothing that's going to make a client or even the creative director's eyes glaze over like just gobs and gobs of stage direction.
Right. Yeah, it's true. I think I was guilty of that too, because in my head as an art director and part-time director, I think of every detail through and every script concretely. And I feel like I need to describe every detail because of the humor. And you realize very quickly when you're on your fourth paragraph and you're talking about the type of tie that the person is wearing and everybody's eyes are rolling back, you're like, uh-oh, they don't think the script's funny. No, they did. You've just been presenting for an hour.
Yeah. You're just talking too much.
I'd be curious. I imagine that Eric and I were not the most fun creatives to CD. Like, I assume, like, I'm just wondering if we, I assume we were pretty opinionated.
Yeah, but, and you guys were kind of a pain in the butt sometimes. but I always would take that over, like, really good creatives who worked really hard and came in with lots of ideas that most of them were very solid and they're a pain in the butt. I'll take that over the alternative. I mean, a lot of the best creatives are kind of that way. Not all. There's different personalities.
Tiny nightmares.
But Andy Loganour is a great creative who's not a nightmare at all. He's just like...
He's just pleasant.
Most easygoing, pleasant guy.
Yeah.
You and Eric were...
Nightmares.
Kind of difficult, I guess. I never thought you were nightmares. Nathaniel Lawler is kind of difficult just because he's so opinionated.
Yeah.
And he's super talented and he's got a strong opinion. I'll take that any day of the week.
Right.
Over somebody that's not as passionate and isn't clear on what they think.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think when you also talk about selling to clients, I think it's a little bit what I said earlier, which is I think when you're a CD, you're taught creative is king. And everybody else is kind of, especially, I think coming, it was a different mentality at Wyden than at Shiat. And I didn't see parts of the team as assets. Like, I was like, what is a calm strategist? And why are they in the meetings? And over time, when you started listening to them and respecting them, they had some of the best tweaks on the ideas that we ever made.
Yeah.
AJ, he was our comm strategist for us. And we were doing a activation for Old Spice. And he was like, you should do this on Twitch. And we're all like, what is Twitch? I mean, this was 50,000 years ago. And it was when it just started. And he explained it to us. And we're all like, no, we don't want to do it on that. And he explained why it made sense. And we trusted him. And it made the whole idea. So I think over time, when I started seeing account strategy media as assets, you start making better decks. And all of it is about in service of selling your idea.
Yeah.
So when you stop being like, I used to think it would be, I'd get on full suits of armors when I went into full team reviews, being like, let's go to war. And when you go in being like out the full suit of armor and realizing you don't need it and everybody's there to help, everything gets better. And when you facilitate, I always say great ideas can come from anywhere. Like, count people are like, I know this is bad, but here's a headline. I'm like, if it's good, I'll present it in the meeting.
I will selfishly take great ideas from anyone.
Anywhere.
And
yes.
If you say something that makes my idea better, I am never going to turn
it down. I love you forever.
Yeah.
And once they see that you're open to that, everybody starts being more willing to contribute and everybody gets better.
That was a fun part of the culture of the Old Spice team. And then it later, from what I hear and from what I saw as ECD, that became the culture of the KFC team, where it was like,
right,
everyone is a part of the process. That doesn't mean everything is focus grouped or everyone, like, we're having a group brainstorming session. It's not that. it's still led by the creatives. It's still run by the creatives, but there's just an openness and a collaboration and a willingness to hear ideas from anybody on the team. And when you do that, you just get like, you can look at both of those examples as just like fountains,
right,
geysers of good ideas and executions across all forms of media. All right. We are just about out of time. Let's end with how we punked Jordan Mews on the Greg Jennings shoot.
Jordan Mews, one of our favorites.
One of our favorite account people ever.
Yes. I think he's president of the world now.
Yeah. He runs the entire world.
Well deserved. Jordan Mews was a very, at the time, youngish account person. We were shooting an Old Spice spot with Greg Jennings, then famous NFL wide receiver. I think it was his first shoot without somebody else.
Yeah,
or
like
something.
I think it was his first shoot where he was running the whole thing. Like he was the top account.
And he was
person.
Very high strung because of that.
Yeah.
So we're at the shoot and he's freaking out pretty much all the time. He's doing a great job, but he's very high strung. So we thought, oh, well, we got to mess with him then. So we went into Greg Jennings' trailer to meet Greg Jennings.
Who was hilarious, by the way. Like even before this,
he was fun.
This is how we knew he'd be up for it, because you and I would go into his trailer. Somebody would say, like, Greg wants to go over the scripts with you guys. Can you go in his trailer? And we'd go in his trailer, and there was no Greg Jennings. And we'd be looking for 5 minutes. And then all of a sudden, he jumps out of a pile of clothes.
Got you guys.
Got you.
And that spot in particular was, the joke was, it looks like he's doing push-ups. And as you pan up, he's doing push-ups with somebody on a jet ski
on his back.
Yeah. So the problem is, the director was like, it was kind of held up by like a piece of twine. It didn't look super safe. And Jordan came up to us and he was like, should we be putting Greg Jennings under this giant jet ski that weighs hundreds of pounds? He's like, it doesn't look safe. And we're like, oh, it's fine. Don't worry about it. And he's like, he's worth millions of dollars. If we break his back, we're going to be in trouble. And I was like, ew, dude, it's totally fine. And he was like, okay. Then he came back up later. He's like, hey, should we talk to him about the jet ski thing. We're like, it's fine. So then we go into Greg Jennings. We say, we go over the scripts. Everything's good. He's like, anything else? And we said, there is one thing. Jordan Mews is our account person. He is deathly afraid that you're going to get crushed to death by the jet ski. And Greg Jennings laughed. And we said, what if you pretended that you were not okay with the jet ski and you were going to walk off set?
And you're not even going to finish any of the rest of the day.
I'm done shooting.
You're done shooting.
And he was like, I freaking love it. And the agent was like, can I get in on this? The agent gets in on it. We plan it all out. We go get Jordan. Me and you walk out. We go, Jordan, oh man, we're in trouble. It's bad. Like, Greg Jennings is in there. He says he quits. He's not going to do it. We don't know what to do. Oh, man, we're freaking out. Jordan's like, oh, no, my worst fear has happened. You're freaking out. I'm freaking out. He's like, I got it. Let's just go in. Let's talk to him and explain it's going to be okay. He handled it like a pro. We went in, but Greg Jennings, give it to him. He should have won an Oscar. He was like, he went in for it. He was like, I'm not going to sacrifice my family, my well-being, and my future for this spot. I'm done. He started packing up his bag. The agent's like, hey, I need to talk to you outside, Jordan. Like, this is a big problem. He takes Jordan outside, lays into him. Jordan is sweating bullets by now. He calls our head account person at the time, is Dalton, and he explains to Dalton the situation. Dalton's like, dude, I don't know. Fix it. You got to fix it. I believe we told Dalton to be in on it, too.
We might have had Dalton in on it, too.
And Dalton was like, Jordan, you got to do it. Your job's on the line. Jordan goes in. He's desperate. Greg's like, no, he's packed up his bag. He's leaving. We're sitting there. And Jordan's like, come on, man. I need you to be cool with this. He was so serious. And Greg was like, I can't. And he was like, man, please. I'm asking you from person to a person to be cool with this. And it was so sincere that even Greg goes, I can't do it anymore, man. We're just messing with you. And Jordan goes, what? And we're like, yeah, man, it was all just a joke. And Jordan, look, he was like, I thought he was going to pass out.
I think
you
like fell onto the ground and was just like,
He was like, I hate you guys so much. and now he talks about it all
then
the time.
Then he thought it was hilarious.
And we shot the spot. He didn't get crushed.
No, Greg Jennings.
Everybody wins.
Greg Jennings is alive and well today.
He's alive and well.
We love you, Jordan.
We love you, Jordan, so much.
Well, thank you, Greg, friend, partner.
Thanks for having me.
Former bed partner. Businessman in a
Hopefully they didn't just scroll to the end of this podcast and just hear that
former bed partner. We were two business executives sharing a bed for business reasons.
Anything for great work, including pillow dams.
All right. It's been fun. Thank you for everything. Thank you for letting me sleep at your house. And let's hope that the Cougars destroy the Longhorns.
Didn't you have a rap prepared to
Diamondbacks destroy
sing at the
Rangers?
End? You were saying you wanted to do a rap.
No, it was not a rap. It was a Celine Dion song.
Okay, let's go.
I don't know any Celine Dion songs.
Thank you. Right. Thanks for listening.
Thanks,
Thank
everybody.
You. Love you forever. Bye.